Okay. All right. So I guess I get to introduce the speaker now. So I met Tom a few years ago in Ridgeview at the outpatient, and like as soon as I met Tom, I'm like, damn, he's just like a really nice guy. Like, not in that kind of nicey-nice that you really just go, ooh, nice, but just like really, really cool. Like, this is a really cool dude, and he's so nice. And we just like, we talked and we just kind of clicked. And then we were doing some meetings up at Detox, and I started hearing like bits of his story. You know how you know someone, but you don't really know their story, and you kind of get in your mind what you think it's gonna be like. And I'm like, wow, man, this story is totally not what I thought it would be. And I'm like, this dude has quite a story, and I want to hear it. And so I volunteered to do the first Friday, and I'm like, Tom, will you tell your story? And he was like, yeah. So I'm real excited, and I give you Tom N.
Hey. I think you can hear me. I usually yell anyway. It keeps me from sounding nervous. My name's Tom. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you all for letting me do this. Especially Eddie. I know he's probably holding his breath right now. You know, today and yesterday, I caught myself kind of being, you know, all excited and proud of, man, I get to tell my story at First Friday, you know, pretty pumped about it. And then my head started talking to me, and it's, you know, saying things like, oh, man, a bunch of people have done this, you know, it's not that big a deal, man. And it's not like you're talking to the president, you know. And then, you know, you're not even approaching it right. Look at you getting all puffed up and proud about it, you know. And so my head was just chirping away, doing what it does. But because of the things and the training that I've gotten in this program, I told my head to shut up. You see that? I did good. I am proud to be here telling my story, and it means a lot to me. It means that I listened for once, and it means that I did what was suggested that I do for once. And then it means that somebody special, Margaret, who we met and talked, and we were probably talking 15 minutes and knew that our stories were, you know, we were just alike, you know what I mean? And that's the kind of, that's where the magic begins here, when I can talk to somebody about the crazy crap that has gone on in my life, tragic stuff, and we can chuckle about it and say, damn, me too, you know, that's a good feeling. And so, you know, and an important thing, she thought there was something that I might say that was worth hearing. You know, I don't know about y'all, but I never felt like I fit in places. I never felt like I really had anything to say that people wanted to hear. I'd start telling a story in the group I was in. Somebody would just start telling another one on top of it. You know, and I'm waiting for him to come back and say, what were you saying, Tom? You know, whatever, man. You know, I'm like, hey, wait up. So anyway, thank you, Margaret, for inviting me to do this. Thank you, the alumni, and thank you, residents, and everybody here for listening to me. I really appreciate it. So now listen up. You're mine for a while, and I get to do nothing but talk about myself. So this is getting better and better. You know? My sobriety date is the 14th of August of 2019. I have a sponsor, Chaz the Hippie, and I have worked the steps, and I am working with sponsees and walking them through the steps. That's something I never thought I would do, but I'll get to that. So the first time I got sober was November 1st of 1989. To do the math, there's 30 years between the first time I got sober and my sobriety date. And that's where I'm going to focus a lot of what I talk about. I'm going to talk about my experiences. I'm going to tell a few stories. I think it's important that I relate to you what happened, how I felt, what I was thinking, and hopefully you'll find something relatable in there with your own experience. I think that's where the magic starts and ends here in this program. I'm not going to tell you about the steps, how I went through them, what my experience with it was, how to work the steps. The instructions are in the book, and get a sponsor, and your sponsor will walk you through the steps, and you'll have your own experience with them. And there's nothing I can add to those instructions. I got to turn the page here. So what I hope you get out of this, and I'm going to say this up front in case it doesn't happen, just remember what I said in the beginning. I'm hoping that you get three things out of what I'm going to tell you. The first thing is to keep trying. There is no too old, too stupid, too smart, too dishonest, none of that. This might be the time, so keep at it, you know, and I tell myself that quite a bit. The second thing is any sober time is valuable. Relapse doesn't invalidate what I learned and how I grew when I was sober. Because there were chunks of sobriety along that 30 years. And I did grow, and I did, you know, every day I was sober was a valuable day. Every day I wasn't sober was valuable because I was headed toward my sobriety. But every sober day is valuable. You can't take away the good choices that I made on those days and the results of my effort to stay sober for those days. And the third thing is that, and this is the most important thing, this is how to do this, okay? I lied, I'm gonna tell you how to do it. It's not necessary to understand anything, believe in anything, or feel a certain way to stay sober. Just do what is suggested. You think it's too stupid? Good, do it. You think it's uncomfortable, and it will be or is, good, do it. You don't believe it's going to work? Good, do it. You don't feel like it's changing you? Good, do it. And it will do it, it'll change you in spite of you, or at least that's my experience. Sorry, I stick to my experience. It changed me in spite of all of those things. So anyway, before I got sober in 89, I tried really hard to find a way to have a good life and party. I was really good at partying. I was not so good at, I don't know, whatever having a life is. I remember, I got out of the Army, and I had really perfected the art of drinking there. People say go to the Army to get, you know, to get straightened out. It backfired for me. I lived in Clarkston, and standing on the bus on Ponce de Leon, standing at the bus stop on Ponce de Leon, waiting to go to Avondale Station to go downtown to work. I'm wearing my old Army low quarters, which used to have heels, but they fell off, and the nails in the bottom of the shoes were poking holes in my feet. It's really weird. It didn't bleed or anything, but I had these weird holes in my feet because I wouldn't take $10 and go to Payless Shoes or whatever and buy me some black tennis shoes to wear. So I kept wearing these Army low quarters. The leather was cracking. And I would look at these cars going by, and they're nice cars and decent looking people in those cars. And I'm thinking to myself, why can't I do that? What is wrong with me? You know, I grew up in a normal middle class family. We had some crap going on, but I've heard stories since I got in recovery that makes me think I was a lot closer to Beaver Cleaver than I thought I was, you know. I just couldn't figure it out, though. I really didn't understand what I was doing wrong. I had a roommate that told me, look, man, if I was as depressed as you are, I would kill myself. It just made me feel worse. I mean, I never really seriously considered suicide, but I would do everything possible to do the wrong thing. You know, I stare at a wall for hours because I just can't stop being anxious, terrified, depressed, you know, just felt horrible. When I worked as a waiter downtown in Steak and Ale, it's not there anymore, but there was a bar across the street called Fitzgerald's, and they were known for big everything, including drinks. And I would find a break in the middle of my shift, walk outside, throw my little drink tray in the bushes, and run across to Fitzgerald's waving. And they see me coming, they know it's me, and they would put a double gin and tonic on the counter, and I'll pay you when I get back. And then I would go back and work. That's what I did during those times. I'd give away my money to the shell game hustler in MARTA while I'm waiting on the train to go home. You know what I mean? I made every awesome choice that you could possibly make. I got kicked out of my apartment because I couldn't pay the rent. Then I moved in with my brother and his new wife. Guess how that went? they threw me out. And then I ended up back home with my parents, which was the ultimate insult. Man, I can't live with my parents. You know, now I'm just kind of glad they were there and still would let me in. But at the time, it was like, oh, God, what has happened to me, you know? Anyway, I continued on like that, started snorting coke, started smoking crack, found out that that's really what I like, and did as much as I could of it. And then my mother found me on the floor in a fetal position after a long night, and I was coming down, and suggested that I go to the VA hospital for treatment. So I gave in, and I went, my dad took me down there. And by this time, I was sure I was not an alcoholic. I was not an addict. I didn't know near enough to be able to classify as that. But I felt so bad for my dad. I could tell he was desperate, you know. So anyway, I ended up talking to this psychiatrist for a few minutes, and she's asking me, well, you know, how much did you do? What types of stuff did you do? Blah, blah, blah. And I told her the truth because I thought, you know, they probably can see through BS. They talk to people all the time, and you know, I might as well tell them the truth. And at the same time, I felt really bad because I knew my dad would be upset or disappointed that if they wouldn't take me. The truth was, I was terrified because I didn't know, I really didn't think I was an addict or an alcoholic, but I didn't know what I was. And if it wasn't this, man, I'm still back to square, ground zero, not knowing what the hell's wrong with me. So they send me out, and I wait there for a few minutes, and they come out and say, did you bring some clothes? And I said, no, and my dad reached under the seat, yeah. So they had set me up. So I spent time in treatment. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. I the first meeting I went to, I saw people saying things that rang home. You know, I meant to pay the bills, and I just didn't. I don't know how to explain it. You tell somebody that, and that's the dumbest thing anybody could ever say, but you tell me that, and I'm like, yeah, man, I know what you're talking about. And that's what I was hearing, you know? And I thought, damn, man, I'm here. You know, I have arrived. This is what I've got. And so I got out of treatment. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps to the best of my ability at the time. I carried the beeper for the CA hotline. I'll tell you how long ago that was. And I was so proud. I had a pocket full of quarters. I'm waiting for that thing to go off, you know. I think it went off like twice in the whole 2 weeks I carried it. But anyway, I was excited to serve, you know. I was a GSR for a group for a little while. And I stayed sober for 5 years. But along the way, I went back to school. I got married. Life was good. And I just sort of slid away. I mean, how common, right? And my wife was going to a happy hour with some friends. And I thought, well, that'd be good. So I asked her, hey, you think it'd be okay if I went to happy hour? I think, you know, I was an addict, but I really wasn't an alcoholic. And she had never seen me high, drunk, none of it. And so she's like, yeah, just don't do anything stupid, you know. So I started going. Next thing you know, I've got 3 refrigerators in the house. I had one in the garage. It was an old 1950s one with the handle. I had one in the basement, and I had one upstairs, all full of beer. I was brewing my own beer. It was horrible, but I drank it. And then I'm back to smoking crack again. And so now I'm doing things like I'm gone for 3 days, and then I come home and walk in the door, and I could see this like it happened yesterday. And my 2 boys, who were, I don't know, 3 and 1 maybe at the time, are at the top of the stairs. And the 3-year-old says, hey, Daddy, did you go on a trip? That's a bad feeling, man, you know. But I went back and got a white chip. And I tried again, and I tried to work the steps, and I tried to get sober, and I heard things from people like, Tom, you're wanting to want to. And my response was, oh, but in my head I'm like, blankety blank blank, what the hell do you mean? I'm trying really hard, man. I didn't know what I was doing wrong, but I'm hearing this stuff from people. Years later, I met a woman that I knew during this period, and she said, oh, I remember one meeting. You were in there. It was so funny. We were talking about half measures avail us nothing, and you raised your hand and said, what about 3/4 measures? And I didn't remember doing that, but that's the way I felt. You know, I wanted to do as little as I can to skin by and get in and be okay, you know. But I couldn't get it together. I'd go back out. I used to back the car out, and we'd come back from party. We'd all go downtown to the Baja Beach Club. I don't know if anybody remembers that, in Buckhead. And we'd come back home. It's 2 a.m, but I'm not ready. So they drop me off. I get in the car. I don't crank it up because it's going to wake my wife up. I put it in neutral, back it down, and then crank it and turn the lights on later, and I'm gone again, you know. I took my kids to, we used to go camping a lot, and I took them to Skidaway Island one time, and I left them in the camper while I went to Savannah to go drink. That's the kind of great decisions I made when I was drunk. And I've only shared that like two other times, and for years and years I didn't tell a soul about that. I'm still not, you know, I mean, obviously that's a shameful thing, but it's what I did, you know. But every time I'd go out, I'd go back in and get a white chip. I'd burn my life to the ground and go back and get a white chip and try again. I didn't know what else to do. If there was something else that I thought would work, I would have done it, but I couldn't find anything. So I would go back and get a white chip, and I'd try it again, and go back and try it again. And it was embarrassing, you know? But I felt so bad, I didn't give a damn about embarrassment, you know? So I lost my wife and got a divorce. Time went by. I got little spurts of sobriety here and there, but it's the same old story, you know. I'd go back out. And then I met a woman after I'd been divorced for a while, and I talked her into marrying me. And so I'm married again, you know, and I messed up on her. I wasn't going to do it. I was sober when I married her. But I went out 2 days before Christmas, and I couldn't figure out who I bought what when I got home. None of the presents made sense, you know, but I was drunk when I bought them. So finally, I decided I'm going to get a sponsor. I'm going to work the steps one time exactly the way they tell me to, because they keep saying I'm not doing it right. So I'm going to do it right and make sure I do. And when it doesn't work, I'm gone. I'm going to give up all pretense of trying to be a normal person, and I'm just going to, it'll be full on, right? So I found this guy, and he sponsored me, and I did what he told me to do, and I got sober. Imagine that. And I stayed sober for 7 years in spite of me. But then I decided to move out here to Vinings, and all my friends, you know, I had sort of whittled my way down to a meeting a week, and I would go to breakfast on Saturday with these guys, and I felt a good sense of accountability to these guys. They were my friends, you know, and some of them told me, "Tom, if we didn't have breakfast, you'd never make this meeting," you know. And they might have been right, but I did. I made that meeting every week. I didn't volunteer for crap, and I would go out of my way to avoid you if I thought you were going to ask me to lead the meeting, and God knows I wasn't going to tell my story, and I certainly wasn't going to sponsor anybody, you know. That was completely out of the question. I don't think I ever considered it, because this whole time I sort of still felt like I never belonged, you know. I never could get the right. Later, I think what happened was I had some issues in my head that needed to be worked on too. And so I just never felt like I fit in or belonged, in spite of being with my people, you know. So anyway, we moved out here, and I took the advice of those guys. I started going to more meetings than I did before, and I started trying to talk to people. I didn't really talk to anybody, but I went to the meetings, and they did them all wrong. They're a bunch of idiots out here. They don't know what they're doing. They don't share right. God almighty, if that guy shares that again, I'm going to throw up, you know, that kind of thing. And And so I talked myself right back in, you know, and a beer became a good idea. And so there I went. I was off and running. And I went downtown, sat in a tent. I mean, in the middle is like the corner of, well, I don't tell you where it is, but it's right downtown in the good area, and smoked crack in a tent all day, and then got a hotel room in the Hilton and continued to do my thing. Finally, I had lost my phone. I had lost my keys. But I knew where I lived, so I walked. And I walked from downtown at the Hilton all the way down Peachtree to Paces Ferry and all the way down Paces Ferry to Vinings. I live right close to Jubilee. And when I got there, the thing that was on my mind was, I am so thirsty. God, please let her let me in just to get a drink of water. That's all I want, you know. And because I knew I was done. And my wife opened the door and she says, I'm glad you're home. And I'm looking for a gun or something, you know. And she let me in and I'm chugging the water. And then she acted totally weird. It is, go to sleep and we'll talk tomorrow. I know you must be tired, stuff like that. And I'd never seen that kind of behavior before, and she had gone to Al-Anon that night. My old sponsor told me one time, you can suggest it to her once and don't ever mention it again. And I did, and she said, you got the problem, not me, you know. So I never said anything else, but I had just gone out and gone out and gone out so many times. She called my old sponsor in desperation. He told her, go to Al-Anon. And I could tell you that Al-Anon has saved her life and saved our marriage. And it's a wonderful program. I'm so glad that she is a member of Al-Anon. We speak the same language. You know, everybody says, oh God, they're an Al-Anon black belt, look out, you know. But they have this concept of a hula hoop. I can tell her, because the only thing you can control is within the space of this hula hoop, right? So I tell her, hey, where's your hula hoop? that doesn't work, but I do it. after that time, it wasn't done. I still went out again, and I'd come back, get a white chip. Damn it, I'm going to do it this time. And every single time I came back, man, I swear I was going to get it right, you know. But I'd end up back out. And finally, she kicked me out. And I was in this extended stay hotel, and I was drunk, and I called her crying, you know, I don't know what to do, what's wrong with me? And she said, well, go to treatment. And the first thing I thought was, God, really? Because that ain't going to work. You know, I'd been to treatment in 89. I'd been to treatment at, Summit Ridge. I always get the ridges mixed up. In Lawrenceville. In 2004, and then here she wants me to go again. But I did it thinking maybe she'd let me go home. And I was kind of in trouble at work, so that would put them at arm's length. So I came to detox and slept the whole time, and then I got to residence. And they do this thing where, and now remember, with that sponsor that I had, I got 7 years sober before I moved out here to Vinings. And I was stuck on that 7 years, man. If you met me in a meeting, I'd say, hey, I'm Tom, I got 40 days, but I had 7 years. You needed to know that I had that time, damn it. you didn't care, you know, but I needed you to know, because that's where I hung myself, and that's what I needed to get back to. And I felt like if I don't get back to that, then, you know, life doesn't start till I get 7 years again. And it was awful. And so anyway, I'm sitting in this room. We had to check in every night, and you say, you know, did you call your sponsor, blah, 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 and how many days you got, right? And if you get a multiple of seven, they clap for you. And the first time I heard that, I thought, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen, you know? And then I got 7 days. Oh, well, it's okay. It felt pretty good. But it finally hit me that, you know what, man? I have got to drop the whole 7 years thing. I got to let it go. It was really hard, but I can't put my existence on you knowing that I had 7 years. That's where my whole pride sat, you know? And I stopped saying it. And I started doing things like listening to people that I didn't think I needed to listen to. You know, I did what some people do and sit in meetings and go, you know, that one says the same thing every time. That one's probably going to be drunk tomorrow. Meanwhile, I'm in treatment with them. You know, and stuff like that. I didn't stop doing it. I tried to stop doing it, and I listened when people talked. And I did what my sponsor told me to do. I did what the people here told me to do. I didn't believe any of it would work. You know, I've done it for 30 years. I know more about the big book than any counselor in here. You know, that's what I was thinking. But when I started listening and sort of, and quit trying to, I'm an old timer, even though I don't have any time. You know, it's just become a newcomer, man. That's what I did. And I started hearing things that I'd either never heard or forgot or something, but it all became new again. And it was exciting. And I never thought that that would happen, you know? So I got out of Ridgeview. A friend of mine, Anthony, that a lot of you know, he's in Wyoming now, but he and I became friends at the Atlanta Men's Workshop one time. He was in line for the barbecue, and he's just talking and talking and talking and talking about sobriety and this and that and the other, and I thought, my God, this guy is full of shit, you know? Sorry, Eddie. But he kept talking to me, you know, and eventually I realized, wow, this guy, because he's super excited, you know, and it just seemed so campy, you know, but that's him, and he really was excited like that. So anyway, we became friends, and when I got out of here, he'd been through here too, and he said, look, man, all the friends you made while you're in treatment, because you bond with people really tightly when you're in here, even for a few days, you know. He said, all those friends you made, all those plans that y'all have to stick together and you're all going to go to meetings and stuff, the second you walk out of there, it's gone. And if you don't go to a meeting that night, the next day you're going to be saying, I think I overreacted. And then the next day, you will have forgotten to go to a meeting, and then after that, why bother? You know, so I went to a meeting that night, I went to the alumni on Thursday, and I started trying to do what people told me was a good idea to do. The problem with that stuff is it's all uncomfortable. There's no suggestion, or there's no step or suggestion for something that will help me grow that's just nice and easy. It never is like that. I think that that's not fair personally, but I don't know what to do about it. But I do know that it worked anyway. I still today, I don't know what my higher power is. Let me back up. I tell you, I spent a long time reading books, trying to understand. You know, I read about, well, a lot of stuff. And I spent a lot of time talking to a pastor. Every week or two, we'd talk. And, you know, I could not figure it out. I couldn't reconcile stuff that I found to be a problem. I didn't feel a connection to God. That was a huge problem for me, because I'd hear people in meetings saying, man, my connection with God or my higher power is so tight. You know, I wake up every morning and I'm walking with my higher power. And wow, dude. Really? Because I never had that. Or talk about, I love my higher power. Really? I don't know. And I couldn't relate, but I just stopped arguing and just did the stuff I was supposed to do. As long as I was doing the right thing, the motive didn't matter, none of that mattered. It worked in spite of me, you know. I heard a guy in a meeting say, I got a higher power so shit would go better for me. I'm like, man, you're my best friend. That is exactly right, you know, and it's true. But, you know, I'm not an altruistic person, you know. I'm not a naturally selfless guy, you know. I'm the last one to be that. But I do selfless things because I'm told to, and because now, through experience, I know it'll help me, even though I never want to do it. I haven't got to the point where, you know, they say, go to meetings till you want to. Well, sometimes I want to. I'm close, but I still ain't there yet. I've just got to do it, you know. And it works, you know. I'll have 3 years. Well, I have close to 3 years, let's put it that way. If I was a betting man, I would not bet on me in Vegas. You know, I've done this before, and my track record sucks. And sometimes that'll creep up on me. You know you're full of shit, dude. When I go home tonight, on the way home, God, you sucked. You know, that's what's going to be in my head coming out. And I can listen to it, or I can ignore it. And maybe I can call somebody and talk about something else, you know. Those things help me. Let me figure out where I am. So one of the greatest things I've learned is my sponsor convinced me that the stuff that I've done, the crap I've put myself through and my family through, is valuable and it's useful. And I finally realized that, you know, I went and read the pamphlet on sponsorship. I want to know exactly what my contract is here with this person before I get into something like this. And I'm just a guy walking somebody through the steps because I've done it before. That's it. That's really what it boils down to. Oftentimes, you know, you become friends or friendly, or, you know, there are other experiences that happen while I've sponsored people. But I keep it that simple. And then what that did was give me a sense that I could do it and that I belonged enough where it was something that might be valuable to somebody, and that took, I'd never in my life felt that way. And so I've sponsored a couple of guys, and it's been an unbelievable experience. My first sponsee that stuck around is a guy from Wales. Thank you, COVID. I met him in an online meeting, and I was attending this 24-hour meeting. I know I got to wrap up. I just needed a sponsee, and I put on Facebook, they have a Facebook group, hey, anybody need a sponsee? I live on the East Coast. You know, call me or text me. And he did, and you know, I talked to him the other day. I'm still sponsoring a guy, poor guy. But he has stayed sober, and he has worked the steps, and he has seen miracles in his life. And nothing, all that I did was say, here, all right, now it's this thing, now it's that thing. There's no, you know, I didn't do it. He wanted it, and God did the rest, you know. Anyway, let's see. Look, I only have two words left on here. I think I ran out of time before I finished my notes. But it is time, so I'm going to wrap this up. Another thing that happened to me that was very important for me, and I think a big part of why I don't wake up in the middle of the night anymore anxious about nothing, that stuff I can't figure out. I don't feel a tremor of fear constantly throughout the day in my life. I am sure that I belong here and a couple of other places now. And a big part of that, I mean, a huge part of it is the program and what I've learned. But a big part of it is also that I sought treatment for whatever's wrong with this. And I now believe that that's important, and it's a physical malady, and it has worked for me. I'm grateful to Ridgeview. I'm grateful to everybody that I know. I'm grateful for all of you, and I really appreciate y'all listening to me tonight. Thank you.
So much, Tom. Thank you for sharing that. It's like you tell my story every time I hear you talk. Thank you so much again.